Welcome in to another episode of Home Field Advantage. Hope you're all having a great week wherever you may be across our great country or our great land. I'm Will Highland. It's February 1st, 2024. Wow, we're into February already, which is Super Bowl month. I'm taking this show a little bit off the road here, meaning that it's not, you know, my typical setup, no audio, no music at the beginning, no video, no bells and whistles, just raw sports takes. And as we get into the week in between the Super Bowl and the championship games, or vice versa, it's Pro Bowl week, it's NHL All-Star week, the NBA's in full swing. I just found out that Truck Day will be February 5th. For those of you still interested in the Red Sox. And we're on our way. We're on our way through the sports calendar heading toward the Super Bowl. And of course, the Super Bowl will be featuring the two teams to which I predicted in August would be in the Super Bowl. Both teams had a bad stretch of play in the second half of the season. But I was willing to stick to my prediction once the playoffs began. And here we are heading into the Super Bowl. And we have Kansas City and San Francisco rematching Super Bowl 54. And I'm not ready to make a pick yet, because we still have 10 days until kickoff, and I have plenty of time to think about it. I think last time I looked, which was Tuesday, it's now Thursday, San Francisco was a 1.5-point favorite. I'm not sure that's going to work. I don't like that bet. Pat Mahomes is, I believe, 11-1-1 against the spread in his career. And with a spread as narrow as 1.5, that's probably going to mean a win for the Chiefs. So I'm leaning Kansas City, but I'll have my full pick next week. That said, how did they get here? All right, Baltimore was a complete no-show offensively. They had bad turnovers. They had bad penalties. And like I mentioned last week, I thought Kansas City was the more disciplined team. And that proved to be right. It was not Patrick Mahomes' best performance, but he got the job done. He didn't turn the ball over, I believe, at all. Or at least not in a key situation. And as a result, they win a 17-10 sort of ugly road playoff game. Chances are you're going to have to do that in your career, right? You're going to have to, win some ugly road games in your career if you're going to make the Super Bowl every year, like Mahomes seemingly is. Brady struggled to do that a few times, but he also, you know, he went on the road and he beat a San Diego Chargers team in 2006 that was really good. LT was the MVP. Phillip Rivers had a great season. They had Antonio Gates. I mean, that Sean Merriman, that was a strong team. Brady did that. Aaron Rodgers did that in the 2010 run. Went to Atlanta, went to Arizona, got wins. We saw Green Bay beat Arizona in the divisional round a few times, I believe, on the road. And so this is the kind of stuff that has to happen if you're going to be a really talented team, or excuse me, a really successful team that has talent. Sometimes you got to go into situations where it's not in your favor and you don't get to play the game you want to play. And they did that. Furthermore, Mahomes has another notch in his belt. He's beaten Josh Allen on the road, and he's beaten Lamar Jackson on the road. There's been a lot of Mahomes-Brady discussion, so to speak, over the last 5 to 6 days. And I'll just point out that, yes, Mahomes is fantastic, is probably already a top four, top three quarterback of all time with only two rings to show for it at this moment. I still put Brady 1, Montana 2. I think, you know, we had to wait till Brady won his fifth in order to call him the greatest officially. So I think we should, if Mahomes is going to pass Montana, we should use that same rubric. But then again, we live in social media hot take Olympic culture, so who knows? But I'll just point out that he's finding his way among the all-time greats already. He has wins against the top quarterbacks in his conference in the playoffs year in and year out. Last year, it was Joe Burrow. This year, it was Lamar and Josh Allen. Not to mention an ascending Dolphins team that everybody was all, you know, jazzed up over earlier in the season. So they've been impressive. It reminds me of the 2010s Patriots. Very, very assuming that they're going to get to the spot. Brady would have to beat Manning. He'd have to beat Roethlisberger. He'd have to beat Phillip Rivers or Andrew Luck, and he did all that. And so it's okay to draw those parallels, but we can all just step back a second, I suppose. My other thought about the Chiefs, and then I'll move on to the NFC game and whatnot. I have now understood that the Taylor Swift drama is reaching a whole new level. And what I mean by that is this. I was of the opinion that there could be some drama if the Chiefs were to win a really close game that was decided by the officials, and people were going to think that the NFL was rigged or whatever, that there was a script or all this BS that you hear about. As I said, and I said it last week, they do make the rules gray enough to absolve responsibility and accountability if there's an incorrect call made. But I don't think the NFL is rigged. That said, I think you'd be naive to think that there's not somebody in the league office who was quietly rooting for Kansas City last week, knowing the commercial and marketing impact that would be had if the Taylor Swift, Travis Kelce star couple made their way to Vegas. That said, I don't think the NFL needs publicity. I just think it's an added bonus that they would certainly love. It's not like the Super Bowl needs more storylines, but this certainly adds one that, for better or for worse, people are going to be talking about. My personal take is, if it bothers you, then you haven't been paying attention to sports for the last 20 years since it became a TV product. Colin Cowherd said this yesterday, so I'm not going to parrot him too much. But I will just point out that this is the NFL broadcasts are a TV program. Putting on my sport management hat here for a second, we think it's a football game. It's not. As I've said before, we're not the end consumer. It's a television product to use to sell advertising. That's what it is. And so, essentially, the Taylor Swift craze that has taken over the NFL the last 3 months is an added bonus for the television program. However, as Colin pointed out, she's only been shown for at most a minute of screen time. And that was during the really cold Peacock broadcast that most of us didn't watch anyway. Similarly, last week she was shown for 25 seconds. Now, look, I can understand if you don't like the obsession and the people talking about it on the news. If that bothers you, sure. I can understand that because the media is inherently annoying. However, think about for a second 25 seconds of a 3.5 hour game broadcast. It's not taking away from the football. Nobody is missing any plays as a result. In fact, most of that 25 seconds was after the game when they embraced on the field, which we see all the time, people embrace on the field after the game, or after Kelce scored a touchdown. How many times did they cut away to Giselle after Brady scored a touchdown? A lot. Nobody cared. And nobody thought anything of it because you could just look the other way. Oh my gosh, it's over before you can even think about it. Go up and get another beer. Go up and get another plate of nachos. It's really not that hard to get over it. And so, yeah, maybe the media coverage is annoying, but the impact on the telecast is negligible. It's negligible. How many times do they show celebrities in the booth or on the sideline or waving to the crowd? Probably once a broadcast, at least. It's no different than that. So just move on from it. It's not a big deal. And we can still focus on the football. I want to focus on the football, which is why I'm going to tell you about the NFC game now. The NFC game was wild in that you kind of knew San Francisco was going to come back. Now, look, everybody was all excited about the state of Michigan a few weeks ago. You know, they win a natty. The Lions win a playoff game. This is amazing. It's the best week in Michigan football history, yada, yada, yada. And then it all comes crashing down. You know, suddenly it's not as interesting anymore. Suddenly, the Lions and their honeymoon phase have ended. The Lions, you know, they beat the Rams. This is great. Oh my gosh. And then they beat the Buccaneers. They're going to the NFC title game. And then they run into a more talented, better coached, better disciplined team. And think about the other part of it too, which is, oh my gosh, great week for Michigan sports fans. They win the natty and the Lions are going to the NFC title game or the divisional round or whatever. And now this week, Jim Harbaugh goes to the LA Chargers and they lose in the NFC title game after having a 24-7 lead. And completely blundering themselves with coaching decisions, which, by the way, I may have predicted, although albeit a few weeks prematurely, I thought that was the reason why the Rams were going to beat them wildcard weekend. I didn't think Dan Campbell was ready for prime time. He took care of two teams that they were better than. They were better than the Rams on paper, and they were better than the Buccaneers on paper. And I had predicted the Lions to lose every game because of that. But ultimately, I was right in the NFC title game because they ran into a team that was better than them and that coaching was going to be important and they failed. The 49ers were better coached. They made better clutch plays. And down the stretch, they won the game because they were the more disciplined team. And so therefore, we have San Francisco and Kansas City back in the Super Bowl. I don't have a pick yet. Like I said, I'll get that to you probably next week. But it's going to be an interesting game. I would never bet against Patrick Mahomes in the playoffs after what I've seen. The only time I bet against him is if he was going against number 12. And that's not happening. All right, speaking of bet against, I wouldn't bet against the Bruins to run this goalie tandem as long as they can. And I'm running out of time here, so I'm just going to make a quick little sort of pitch here. They have a great goalie tandem. Jeremy Swayman, Linus Ullmark. I mentioned that it was All-Star Week. Swayman will join David Pastrnak and head coach Jim Montgomery in Toronto for the All-Star game this weekend. Jeremy Swayman, I've said from the beginning, this is a pro Swayman. We are a pro Swayman podcast.
I've been saying that for 3 years since he made his debut in the NHL. Hard to believe he's only 25. But Jeremy Swayman's the real deal. He is the Tuukka-Rask heir apparent. To me, it's become apparent that Linus Ullmark is a great goalie, but that, in my eyes, he is a bridge from Rask to Swayman. Rask was your franchise goalie for 10 years. I think Swayman is headed in that direction. And as a result, it's time, and I said this last week, it's time for the Bruins to extend Jeremy Swayman. They need to get it done. What that entails, I don't know. Could be, I would personally go longer. I would, because he's 25. So if you extend him through his age 33 season, let's say, I think you'd still be in really good shape. I think that would be amazing. And then you could sort of cross that bridge when you get there. Because goalies do break down over time. And to be fair to Swayman, we haven't seen him play a full season, you know, where he starts 60 games or 65 games. I would personally go 8 years, $60 million. That's what I would do. People might freak out that I'm willing to give a goalie between $7 and $8 million a year, but the cap's going to go up, and in 2030, when you have a Vezina Trophy caliber Jeremy Swayman playing for you every year, for that number, it's going to look like a bargain. And so that's what I would do. I would get ahead of the market. I would get ahead of everything else. Because if you sign Swayman to like a 4-year deal, you're just kicking the can down the road. And somebody, probably not you, is going to have to pay him when he's 29 and is a Vezina Trophy winner. I don't want to run into that. Do what the Winnipeg Jets did. They saw the writing on the wall. They locked up Connor Hellebuyck, despite all the music that was around him. And there's a lot of music around Jeremy Swayman right now. They locked up Connor Hellebuyck, and it became the best move that they could have made, because now they are probably among the favorites in the Western Conference. So, just putting that out there, I think you need to choose Swayman. Look, I like Linus Ullmark, but I don't think you should trade either one of them, especially not this year, given that they are the reason why the Bruins are the best team in the East. So, personally, I would prefer that they lock up Swayman long-term and, you know, play out the rest of Ullmark's contract, or maybe deal Ullmark in the offseason, something like that. Do not trade them this year. They're too good right now. All right, I'm going to close up shop here, running out of time, doing a quick morning pod. Just also pointing out, I went to the Celtics Monday night. Damn, I hadn't heard the Garden that long in a long time. That loud in a long time. It was amazing. Tatum, when they started doing the MVP chants, you know, I got chills. Because as much as we can talk about the Red Sox and the Patriots being dysfunctional, it's pretty clear that the Bruins and the Celtics are the class of Boston right now, and that we could be in for a really special spring with one or both of those teams again this year. But we will have to wait a couple months longer to find out. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of Home Field Advantage. Thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a great rest of your week. As always, you can follow us on socials at Home Field Pod. And like, share, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. But until next time, my name is Will Highland. This has been Home Field Advantage.